Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm at Melrose Arch in Johannesburg today to talk to Ian Russell, the CEO of BCX, the company formerly known as Business Connection, now a subsidiary of Telkom. Ian, thanks so much for your time today and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. Firstly, before we dive into what's happening at BCX and in the industry more broadly, I haven't had a chance to sit down with you properly before an in-depth chat. If you don't mind, tell us a bit about yourself and your career history. You're obviously not originally from South Africa, judging by your accent, but I know you've been here for many years. You've worked for ABSA, SAB, Telkom, of course. How did you come to South Africa originally?
So I used to be the global chief information officer for the Barclays Group, and in about 2004 we were looking at acquiring ABSA. So I came down for about 12 weeks just to do a due diligence piece of work as a part of the acquisition process for ABSA, and 13 years later here I am.
Okay. But you've had a number of senior management roles in that time.
A number of roles since I stayed down to help the ABSA Barclays integration work its way through.
Yeah.
I spent 4 or 5 years with ABSA in various roles, mainly in the back office, in the chief information officer space, chief operating officer space. I left there to join SAB Miller to run their sort of supply chain procurement activities, both here and out of Switzerland. And then I got a phone call from somebody called Sipo Maseko in the middle of 2013 saying, help, we've heard you know something about managing operations and cost. We've got a bit of a challenge here at Telkom. Would you come and join us?
Okay.
And that was at the tail end of 2013. I've been in the Telkom group ever since. And I picked up the reins at BCX in May last year.
Okay. So you obviously like it down here in South Africa.
South Africa is home. It's home for myself, my wife, our children. We very rarely go back to England. It's very cold, it's very wet, and it's very expensive there. So
yes.
This is home.
Okay. Well, we were just saying the weather today is kind of very much like Britain, but maybe a few degrees warmer. Now, Ian, you were kind of thrust into the BCX role, weren't you? Your predecessor, Isaac Mopatlane, left the company quite suddenly last year, and Sipo asked you to take over the leadership of BCX. How did you feel about that move, and what did you find when you arrived at the company?
Well, from a personal perspective, it's a great opportunity to really get inside what I think is a fantastic business and have a look at what was going on. And one of the reasons that Sipo asked me to help was because of some of that sort of post-merger integration experience from Barclays and ABSA and elsewhere.
Mm.
And really what we've been trying to do is look at how do we get the best out of the old Telkom enterprise business and the best out of that old Business Connection business and create real revenue synergies and new services for our customers. And that's really been the focus of what I've been doing over the last few months.
Okay. BCX obviously has quite a storied history. I've been covering this industry for too long, actually, about 22 years now. And I remember back in the 1990s that there was a merger of QData and Persitel, two listed companies, to form PQ Africa, I think it was called back then. And then there was the further merger with Business Connection, which was founded by the Mopatlane twins, and lots of change over those years. Telkom then tried to buy the business. That was shot down by the competition authorities on the first attempt. I forget what year that was. I think it was around the mid-2000s. And then Telkom came back several years later and was successful the second time around. Tell us what's been happening at BCX since the Telkom acquisition. What sort of integration has there been between the two businesses? And has the acquisition delivered what Telkom hoped it would?
Yeah, the business connection story is an amazing one, and it's a fantastic success story for a young South African business that generated an enormous amount of revenue and served a lot of customers. At point of acquisition, the old business connection team was turning over 8 billion rand and serving around 200 of the largest corporate customers in South Africa. That's not a small achievement. I mean, that's a heck of a thing over less than 20 years. I mean, funny enough, I'd known Ben and Isaac for quite a long time before I joined Telkom, because I've been working with them as buyer and supplier for many, many years. And in fact, when I was at APSA, I gave Business Connection its then largest ever contract in 2006-2007, which gave them a big scale lift to allow them to become a bigger player in some of those managed desktop services. So I've known Business Connection for a long time. It was a great story. And it was a business that had thrived on really delivering IT services for customers. So managing end-user devices like laptops and desktops, managing your servers, managing data centers and your store compute models, and a particularly strong focus in enterprise resource planning. So the kind of systems that run supply chains and retail chains and so on and so forth. So good, strong, interesting business. Telkom business, of course, is focused on connectivity. It's focused on people making telephone calls and large organizations consuming data to run their computer estates and so on. So the investment thesis behind the deal was very simple. As Telkom began to realize that connectivity is increasingly the core of any connected world, we really needed more skills when it came to putting the value-add services on top of the connectivity. And that's what we saw in Business Connection, a real opportunity to be able to build new things on top of this connectivity core. And our focus in the last couple of years has just been, so how do we access that opportunity and those obvious synergies for our core customers? So in terms of answering your question, what have we been doing over the last couple of years? Well, finding, you know, we've been introducing each other to each other and finding out who we are and what we do, and that's been like all these kind of change management processes, it's taken us a little while. But then really almost going customer by customer. If we had a large customer that used to be a Telkom business customer, where the services were mainly being connectivity, how can we help them with a different set of software engineering solutions or ERP solutions or managed desktops and so on? And really sort of working the cross-sell the other way. So for the traditional Business Connection customer, could we cross-sell some of our connectivity solutions? So really looking at that synergy, the cross-sell, mainly on the products that we used to have. What we're now getting into, having done that quite successfully for the last year or two, is what are the new things that this kind of combination of Telkom and Business Connection of all can actually create? And internally we talk about Engine 2. What are the new capabilities that we think this convergence of connectivity, you know, proper IT technology, can allow us to do to solve problems differently for customers? An awful lot of our focus at the moment is more on that 2025 horizon, actually.
I mean, how has Business Connections or BCX's sales model changed since the acquisition of you? Is it now more of a you guys follow the connectivity guys into business and say, well, you know, we're going to provide you with this fiber connection, but actually we can also provide you with this whole range of IT services on top of that? Or is it more of a case of trying to just sell a holistic package to corporate South Africa?
What a great question. I mean, so firstly, Business Connection has two definable kind of types of customer. We have the large corporates, so like the large banks, the large retailers and so on. We have about 200 of those, and they make up about two-thirds of our turnover. And in that, we also include our public sector customers like the SAPs and Post Office and those kind of guys. And then we've got about 25,500 small and medium businesses as well. So the way in which you manage the relationships between large corporates and the medium businesses is quite different, as you might imagine. So what we've done for our large corporate businesses is quite fundamentally change the model. And the new model we've begun to put in place in the last few months is neither the old Telkom one nor the old Business Connection one.
Okay.
It's a new BCX one that we think is working for us. And it's about putting a key account director on top of each of the main customers that we've got, giving them accountability for the profit and loss of that customer, which is really important because it gives them the decision-making ability to be able to invest in that customer in a different way. And then we give them a small team that includes service delivery people to make sure we do what we say we're going to do, solutioning people that can create new options and new solutions, and the people that can run billing and finance and so on and so forth. So all of our larger customers have a dedicated team, which is quite a new model. And we don't talk about selling in that model, and critically, I think. We're talking about more, how do we listen to the customer about what they need, and then almost play that back with some kind of a technology solution. I think the days of saying, I've got a tin box and a wire and a light, I want to sell it to you,
gone, actually.
And we're really trying to move that dial very aggressively at the moment. And we're already beginning to see some results of that in terms of how our customers are looking and feeling around us. I think in the medium segment, it's quite different. You can't have that kind of relationship with 25,000 businesses.
Yeah.
And we're just at the part of the journey at the moment of saying, how do we create a completely different digital execution strategy for that market segment, so you can actually go online, interrogate your account, dial up or dial down services, have somewhere to go to actually dynamically change the things that we are able to offer to those medium customers. And we're pushing that out into the marketplace under a slightly different brand called Integrate or i8 at the moment, because we're really seeing quite a different dynamic in that market segment, really quite a different kind of set of customer requirements. And we're almost styling ourselves to be the virtual CIO, because those customers can't afford a big IT team and their own IT manager. We need to be that for them. So we've got some distance to go on that medium sector journey, I think, but we have a good understanding of where we want to play.
The South African economy hasn't been great for quite some time. How has that affected the IT services market in South Africa? What are the sort of spending trends we've seen from, particularly from the big corporates? Have companies really reined in their spending in light of the downturn? I mean, there's a lot of talk about cost-cutting. Has IT been heavily affected by that?
Yeah, a classic British understatement, I suppose, at the beginning of your sentence is there, in terms of, you know, a strained economy. Yes, I mean, absolutely. But it's not homogenous. So, yeah. I mean, we are seeing very different patterns in different parts of the economy.
Yeah.
If we take the public sector as a good example, and we've said, you know, over the past 12, 18 months, it's been a very difficult sector to deal with. They've had their own cost constraints. They've had some own changes of direction and so on. So we've been struggling to make significant inroads into the public sector. We are very well entrenched with the financial services sector, and we've seen good growth in the financial services sector. They're a buoyant economy. And we're continuing to sell, you know, a lot of solutions and new things into many of the banks and the insurers and so on. So very strong for us as a sector. Retail has been under the most enormous amount of pressure. And we see that. We see deferred capex. We see people reducing their spending patterns and so on and so forth. So absolutely, we see some pressure there. Mining is another big sector of ours. And mining's had a really tough 2 or 3 years. We're seeing a bit of green shoots, actually, some recovery coming through on mines, particularly as we want to develop some of our own kind of smart mining solutions and those kind of things as well. So we're seeing a little bit of positive recovery in the mining sector. So it's not a single one-size-fits-all answer. Different parts are struggling in different ways.
Okay. And any sign of any green shoots? I mean, we hear about the Ramaphosa effect of the new president. Is it too early to know whether things might be improving?
I think these things have a lag factor, so it's probably too early to see how that will play out. I think, you know, the increasing constraints, I suspect, that will be imposed on the public sector purse just to try and rebalance the exchequer will undoubtedly, you know, reduce some of the spending power that the public sector has. That actually, in turn, often reduces spending power that people have.
Yes.
Because, you know, they have 2.2 million employees. So there's quite a knock-on effect to this, but I don't think you've seen that yet, and I don't think you will for a little while.
Okay. Where does BCX make most of its money today? Is it in outsourcing? What's the big money spinner, and what is likely to be the big money spinner, say, 3 or 5 years from now?
Two very different questions. So today, our business splits into sort of 2 or 3 key categories when it comes to revenue. A lot of our revenue is still generated from the connectivity business, both data and voice. And that's still a very significant portion of what we do.
That's from the telecom business
integration. Yeah, it should predominantly come from the old telecom business sense. And that's probably the better part of half of our turnover on connectivity.
Oh, right. Okay.
We then have a significant amount of revenue that comes from what we call integration services. So everything from putting SAP practices in, creating new solutions for you, and so on and so forth. So a lot of work in that software engineering team. We have nearly 2,500 software engineers inside BCX. We are
good grief.
Yeah, it's a huge team, and it's a very successful team. So we generate a lot of income from running, maintaining, installing different solutions for our customers. And we do still continue to make some money from outsourcing and running end-user device estates like servers and laptops and desktops. But that's a diminishing part of our revenue at the moment.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about the IT services landscape more broadly in South Africa. Many of the companies in this space used to be listed, and they aren't anymore. So it's difficult to get a flavor for who's doing what and who's doing well. Didata is obviously still a player in the market. There's EOH. They're still listed. Gejima, they delisted, although I don't hear much from them these days. Very quiet. How's this services market changed, the competitive dynamics in this market? What's it looking like?
So our two competitors of scale are Dimension Data and EOH, as you mentioned.
Right.
I mean, we turn over 21, 22 billion rand at BCX. So those guys are turning over 14, 15. So we're a chunk bigger.
Yeah.
And with that scale comes some different opportunities for us, which is interesting. Actually, what keeps me more awake at night is less the local competition at the moment and more the global players. So the ability of an AWS, Amazon Web Services, or a Google to come in at scale with their hyperscale that they can access from overseas is far more worrying for me than a fairly stable local competitive environment where we know and respect our competition and we'll lose some and we'll win some.
Have a good idea what they're doing and what they're capable of.
They know us, we know them. Yeah. And we actually work together with these guys all the time, all day, in a great way.
Yes.
I mean, if you go into many of our customers, you'll find all three of our brand names literally sitting next to each other on their desks,
right?
Because we're running different parts of their infrastructure,
right?
So there's a competitive tension that should be there, but I say what's more concerning to me is some of the overseas threat. And once that happens, that has a more impactful way of changing the South African economy, because as more and more of that comes in, we run greater risk locally of job loss, we run a greater risk locally of taking revenue out of our exchequer into somebody else's. So we're much more thoughtful around that at the moment.
Well, I spend a bit of time talking about this actually. I mean, Microsoft has announced they're building Azure data centers here in South Africa. There's rumors that Amazon may do the same at some point in the not too distant future. How do you compete with that? I would imagine that these are largely automated processes, so companies would spin up services in these clouds. And I'd imagine that companies like BCX and other local IT services companies' value will be in that face-to-face interaction, providing on the ground, providing face-to-face support, which these big international providers can't do, or they might be able to do, but they certainly aren't going to be doing it any time in the near future. Is that how you win this competition?
Yeah. I mean, firstly, BCX runs the largest data center estate in South Africa. Sometimes that's a blessing, sometimes that's a curse. But with that comes an ability at the moment to run a whole series of solutions for our customers. So we still run a surprising number of mainframe applications. So mainframes remain a part of our portfolio. And actually migrating away from mainframes is not an easy journey.
Yeah.
So we still see that as something.
Except for the banks and retailers.
Yeah, for banks and retailers predominantly. Mm-hmm. And even some of the data analytics companies that rely on credit bureaus rely on mainframe applications. Yeah. And porting it across is very, very difficult.
You can't just put that in the cloud.
And you can't put that easily in the cloud. And the global players are not interested in that market.
Yeah.
Secondly, we still run a lot of on-premise solutions. So actually on physical premises for our customers, we run their data cloud or store compute models because they want that local access. They want maybe even the cloud part of it to have data sovereignty in South Africa. So that's still quite stable for us, and we see a clear migration path more away from on-premise into locally hosted clouds. The challenge, I said earlier, is the global hosting. We are very clear that we want to play a role for our customers where we can advise them on that cloud migration journey. Yeah. We call it being a trusted advisor or a trusted broker, to almost be able to say, you have some choices. If you want to go into one of the global cloud solutions, these are the pros and the cons of an Amazon Web Services solution. These are the pros and the cons of a Microsoft Azure solution. And we'll help manage and migrate your workload there because we have the skill to do that. But there's a lot of dynamic movement in the marketplace at the moment. You mentioned Microsoft Azure hosting locally with Liquid, who are going to manage that infrastructure for them here.
I was supposed to say that.
And we respect our competition, and it's a part of the dynamic play that we're in at the moment. We have another strong different model with Teraco, who have a co-location model. Now, we have the real estate and the data center infrastructure to migrate into those markets if we want to, but they're commodities, and I want to offer solutions to my customers, not just be somebody where you buy some space.
Yeah.
If you think about a lot of that data center co-location model, you're buying a hotel room.
Yes.
That's actually what you're doing. You're then deciding how you want to manage the bed that's inside that hotel room and how much you pay for the room.
Yeah.
I actually want to sell you a proper end-to-end solution and a service where you haven't got to worry about where the bed goes and managing everything inside the bedroom. So I think there's a fundamental difference of view in terms of what that model looks like.
Okay. I mean, when you go and sit in front of a client and talk to them about cloud, are you selling BCX's data centers, BCX's cloud infrastructure, or is there an opportunity to partner with these international companies as well to sell their their cloud facilities?
We do both.
You do both.
So BCX.
Depending on what the client wants.
Exactly. We have a number of our own solutions, and then we've also built cloud solutions for people like VirtuStreams and SAP.
Yeah.
So even some of the global brands are actually running it behind the scenes off a BCX-hosted cloud.
Mm.
And we have our own clouds for our own customers as well. And I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all that's going to work for the marketplace.
Mm.
Data sovereignty is more important to some sectors than to others.
Mm-hmm.
Scale is more important to some sectors than others. Redundancy, latency, there's a whole series of different dynamics for different customer bases.
Mm. I wanted to ask about your new head office in Centurion. It's quite striking. You had come off at the off-ramp there. Is it the Buerta Avenue off-ramp? No, it's the one before that.
John Forster.
Yeah. John Forster. And it's still called John Forster, good grief. There's the BCX. You turn left and there's this massive new head office facility that you've built there. What was the thinking behind it? You were in Midrand before. Was it about being closer to Telkom, which is just across the highway, or was there something else behind it?
The old Midrand offices that BCX had inhabited were just got to an end of life state where they needed to be refurbished. The lease had run out, and we actually had multiple locations at that point. It wasn't like everybody was in one office in Midrand. They were scattered all up and down that kind of
corridor.
M1 corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you still drive up and down there, you still see some of the old business connection signage on different buildings. So the idea was to consolidate everybody into one new site. And as part of that process, the site that we've built on in Centurion was identified. The identification was done pre-Telkom acquisition, so it was very much a business connection decision to go into Centurion.
Mm.
The proximity to Telkom was helpful, for sure. And now we have everybody in one place. So we have about 4,000 people in that building, and it's a proper modern integrated head office.
Okay. I know that skills development is something that you're quite passionate about, and there are a number of projects that you and BCX have launched. Can you walk us through some of those and some of the things you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, this really is my passion. So, I mean, I suppose firstly, to take a step back before we go forwards, I mean, why am I spending so much time and energy on this key subject? It doesn't really matter which economy you look at. The relationship between a strong growing technology sector and GDP growth is very, very clear. The stronger the technology sector, the stronger the country's GDP growth is over a prolonged period of time. And, of course, GDP growth creates job creation. It creates a whole series of other benefits for a country. And we're very clear that our technology sector in South Africa is not as strong as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the e-enabled services and government we should have. We don't have a lot of the infrastructure that a lot of modern economies do. So BCX, as I said earlier, we're the largest technology company by a long way in the country. And with that scale comes kind of a duty of care. So how do we grow our sector? Because if you grow our sector, then your share of wallet will probably grow, the size of the wallet grows, you start to become more successful as a company, but also your country is going to be more successful. So we started very much having those kind of conversations about what do we do to grow the technology sector, and within that, how do we continue to make BCX successful? And when you look at the constraints that we've got, there are two or three, but the most startling one is the real lack of skill and the capacity that we have in terms of human capital. So what's happening between myself and my competitors, whether it's a Microsoft or an SAP, whether it's a Didata or an EOH, we're competing for the same scarce skills.
Mm.
So we end up in these daft bidding wars for people, but all we're doing is making the same small group of people richer and actually having to charge our customers more. That's not a sustainable model. So we started right at that kind of point to say, okay, so how do we sustainably change the size of the skill pools in South Africa? And our focus absolutely in BCX in the last year or so has been on the 18 to 25 kind of group. We think if we catch people at 18, we've got a really good opportunity to be able to migrate the talent into the technology industry. And it's not a natural choice at the moment. What happens at the moment is if you're good at school, you get told to go and become an accountant or told to go and become a doctor or something.
Or a lawyer, or
a consultant, even worse, right? So what we're trying to say is actually, you know what, technology as a career choice is a genuine, valid, really interesting way to go. Look where the world is going. So the two or three major interventions we've got going at the moment are really in the area of coding and in the area of data science. Now, coding, you've probably heard me say this, we're seeing it almost as the 12th official language of South Africa. Coding is a very generic term. It talks about the way in which we get pieces of equipment to do things, okay, in the most simple way. Some of it's software engineering, some of it's problem solving, some of it's putting binary code in, some of it's on all sorts of clever platforms. Short story is, to be a coder, you need an aptitude to solve problems and a brain that thinks in a very specific way. What you don't need is a matric piece of paper. Mm-hmm. What you don't need is an undergraduate degree. What you don't need is a PhD or a master's degree. You just need a great brain. And what we found on our work on coding and on the data science play is that if we ignore the pieces of paper altogether and we select people based on aptitude, we're getting a much richer, much more diverse, much more natural group of people ready to go into this. And if you take our We Think Code initiative, where we have 600 students, and the We Think Code, we fund the students for 2 full years, completely right the way through their education. They end up at the end of that 2 years, now properly, fully fledged, serious coder capable of changing the world. Right? I mean, these apps change the world that you develop. And we're running a couple hundred of these students off the production line every single year now. And it's not a small achievement. So we're funding that sort of wall-to-wall, end-to-end. But in our first year that we did it, of the top 5 students in the first year, 2 of them did not have matric. So what's happening here is we're almost saying, we hear the education system, we know that it's there, it helps sometimes, but actually we're going to select you to get into these programs based on your aptitude and capability, not on the piece of paper. We opened our Explore Data Science Academy in Cape Town 10 days ago. We're fully funding 100 students on a year's course. Now for data science, for us, again, as connectivity grows more pervasive, as you use apps more and more, you've got more Internet of Things devices, and the amount of data you capture grows exponentially. As it grows, somebody needs to do something with that data, and you've got to create insights from it. And again, data scientists, if anything, are even more scarce than the coders. Mm-hmm. So again, we've taken the same approach, and we've set up a specific academy just to focus on data science called Explore. And in our first intake of 100 people, then 42% of that intake are female. Entirely based on talent. There was no kind of lens applied to the way we selected. It was purely done based on merit and aptitude.
And how does that compare to the profile in the industry?
I mean, I would imagine it over-indexes by about 20 or 30%.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have the figures, but I would guess if I look at my own company, then BCX is, in the technical roles now, BCX is probably less than 30% female.
Okay.
So it's a pretty high indicator, and it's 80% black. In that intake as well, entirely based on merit, talent, and capability. And amongst that group, we have people with no matric, and we've got people with PhDs. So I say, by taking this approach of looking at how you solve problems to be the test of whether you can get into one of these courses, we're finding a much richer pool of skills. And we've been delimiting those people before because they didn't have this blessed piece of paper that people cared about. I mean, you know, in telecom, before I joined, you couldn't even become a secretary or something unless you had matric. We're saying we don't care. And it's making a huge difference to actually opening up the size of that skills pool. And if we do this systemic, and if you know my colleagues and competitors will come with us on this journey, you can have thousands of young people now getting this opportunity. Thousands of young people coming into the technology industry changes the economy.
Is this a criticism of the education system in that it's perhaps not producing the skills that you need?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a criticism of the education system as far as it goes. But it's not local. It's not a local issue. Let's not say it's a criticism of the South African education system.
It's global.
They're finding exactly the same in the States. They're finding exactly the same in the UK. In Korea, where they're really beginning to generate the coding stuff, they've changed their education system. This isn't an African issue. It's not a South African issue. There's a global problem. We're using traditional curriculum, traditional ways, particularly of teaching maths, that actually almost coach out of you your innate, intuitive 6-year-old ability to solve problems. And I'll say it's something that educations all over the world are facing, not just us.
And this aptitude tests, what skills are you looking for? Obviously, a proficiency in logic and mathematics. What else are you looking for?
So a little bit different between the coding and the data science examples. On the coding side, we're very much looking at problem solving and aptitude to really think differently about problems, and some mathematical skills, clearly. On the data science side, it is inevitably, because that's what you're looking at, it's more about your ability to see patterns in numbers and create, you know, a capability from doing that. But also, even on the data science side, you're still having to write programs and create, you know, platforms to move the data between and so on. So it's a different set of skills.
I know we'll have at least a few youngsters listening to this podcast wondering, how do I get involved and find out if this is for me? Is there a website they should go to?
Absolutely. So We Think Code has its own website, which you'll find just by going to Google and going to We Think Code. And the application process, what we're looking for, is laid out fully on that website. And it can do exactly the same for the Explore Data Science Academy. It has its own website. And again, the application process is laid out there very cleanly and clearly.
Okay. Ian, before I let you go, just looking at technology globally and its application here in South Africa, there's a lot of, certainly in the consumer space, there's a lot of interest around things like virtual reality, augmented reality, or mixed reality, as Microsoft calls it. The smartphone innovation seems to have slowed. I know Business Connection is an enterprise-focused, business-focused IT services company, but looking at some of the emerging technologies we're seeing around the world, some of the stuff that maybe is coming out of Mobile World Congress, out of CES, that sort of thing, do you get excited about any of the emerging tech we're seeing around the world and how it might be applied in the South African context?
No, for sure. I mean, I think one of the big things, it's very interesting, we've sat here for 20 minutes looking at each other and talking. Mm-hmm. Looking at each other and talking is becoming increasingly rare.
Yes.
I actually think it's going to get more and more common again. And the reason for that is what we're seeing at the moment is the use of the voice again to be the way of communicating. Even if it's communicating with a machine, I think it's going to come back in a huge way. So the big investment that's now being made in enterprise voice-based solutions. So you, instead of tapping into an awkward, difficult screen on your smartphone, can actually just talk to it naturally. And Siri and Alexa and stuff, they're not quite there yet. I reckon the next 3 to 5 years, that technology will evolve to such a way that you talk to your car, you'll talk to your device, which can probably be 10 meters away from you, mm-hmm. and be doing all the sorts of things. You no longer will need to type an email. To phone your bank, it'll be a voice recognition software program that knows who you are and will do whatever you want to do without typing. I think that ability to reconnect using the voice and actually maybe make eye contact with each other again is going to be one of the big things that will actually come out in the next 2 or 3 years from an enterprise perspective. I think device convergence, people have talked about an awful lot. But if you get to that kind of voice as the key main communication device, the need for keyboards begins to disappear. The reason at the moment you have so many devices in your life is you don't like using that tiny keyboard on your smartphone. Mm. You still want to have a laptop or a desktop. And I think you'll get to a point where actually that phone is probably all you do need, as long as you've got a different way of getting information into it and a different way of getting information out of it. So I think this whole concept of voice as the enabler to change the way in which we use devices and the type of devices that we have as an enterprise or as a consumer is probably one of the most dominant themes you're going to see in the next 5 years.
We hear a lot of buzzwords like big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence. Are those concepts going to change the way businesses in South Africa compete, interact with their customers?
Yeah, I mean, we have a very strong data science capability, which we call BCX Insights. And what we're doing with customers there at the moment is taking often things that are marginally profitable for them at the moment and using the data insights that we can generate from how they run their business and the data they've already got to make them more profitable. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about agriculture or mining or retailing or even banking. So I think if you can take marginally profitable businesses today, use the data insight to make it more profitable in the future, you actually end up with a more robust economy. And particularly on some things that people have begun to check out of, and mining is a good example. You know, there's probably a new lease of life that you can create with much smarter, more accurate ways of running those businesses, and data science and data insights help you generate that.
Mm-hmm. What's your view on the future of work, given that we're increasingly automating? Some people say there's going to be a jobs bloodbath worldwide with artificial intelligence and similar technologies. Yeah. Is there going to be a role for people in future?
Yeah, I suspect I'm an economist by background, and one of the things that I had to read as part of my degree was all around the impact of the first agricultural revolution and then the first industrial revolution. And people were saying the same thing about the advent of the horse-drawn plow and then the tractor and then the combine harvester. And it's quite funny, we're now doing a lot of work and investment on farms as part of our investment in smart agriculture. And there's still an awful lot of people on those farms, right? Mm. So I think new jobs emerge, different jobs emerge. We need to skill people for those jobs in a different way. And sure, some of the old jobs will fall away, but that has not changed in the last 200 years, and I think that evolution will continue.
Yeah, replace a human being with a machine, then you need another human to fix the machine.
But someone's got to fix the machine, right? Now, whether you believe in singularity and that kind of 2041 view, whatever, the reality is, I think, that new jobs are going to emerge, and there'll be an offset play into some of the old jobs that get lost in the economy.
This has been a great discussion. Ian Russell is CEO of Telkom subsidiary BCX. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time.